Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to the roundtable panel for this Friday morning. It is the 3rd of October, and it's very nice to have you with us. We welcome you. Roundtable at WAMC.org if you'd like to be a part of the conversation. And why wouldn't you? Roundtable at WAMC.org. What is there not to love about that as a concept? So please, 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 roundtable at WAMC.org. Let me introduce our panel to you. Well, you probably all know them, but that's fine. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here at the head of the rounded table.
Welcome back, Joe. It's terrific to see you.
Well, terrific to be back. And Raymond, thank you very much for filling in and for doing all that. I appreciate it.
It's terrific to see you.
Yeah. And Rosemary Armeo is here as always. It is our pre. Well, you're one. You're the regular.
I'm a regular. I like that.
Yeah.
She took some good-natured ribbing the last couple of days about her.
That's why I pointed out. He always points out that, oh, she's here. Oh, wow.
All right. So. I have to say that this is our pre-Fun Drive edition of
right.
Roundtable panel. So Monday we will not be doing this. You guys will be on at 6 a.m.
We'll be doing something like it.
That's right.
In that there are microphones in front of us, I suppose. Yeah, you're right.
In that you'll be giving me a hard time for no good reason.
Not true, sir. I eat donuts and keep my head down. That's how I do it in the Fun Drive.
Chocolate donuts. But let's talk, Joe, for a second about the money that has come in here. As of this morning, we have now in the lockbox got $309,000, something like that, right?
Is that right. What you see? And my understanding is then...
And we haven't added the challenges in.
Because we don't add those to the first day.
Right. Well, no, we can do that. We can add those two challenges in now.
Well, because we got them.
Yeah, we got them. We'll have
made
them.
Rather.
Yeah, and that'll be $339 in the lockbox.
Wow.
Boy, would I like to go into the Fun Drive with $400,000.
$400,000.
Wouldn't that be amazing? That'd be just amazing. And everybody, you know, because as I've said so many times, I don't wish to be repetitious, we're all in it together. I mean, that's the whole point, that we've all made this thing together. Somebody walked up to us at dinner last night and said to Roselle and I that she listens every day and she loves it. And we hear this all the time. So it is really, that's so gratifying when you hear something like that, because it really, and I hear it a lot, it really creates a community in what we have. So we're all in this together. $339,000 already. That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's just amazing. It's terrific. And, you know, there'll be somebody who comes up to me and says, why does the Fun Drive have to be so long? And I'll say, did you put anything into the lockbox? And they'll say,
what? What was that?
No, sorry.
They always say,
You were saying before the show that in the early days of doing Fun Drives, you might not have made that much as is in the lockbox now in the whole drive.
Oh, yeah. No. In the early days, I was telling Rosemary that it used to be $150,000, and it was so hard that we were all holding on to each other in the halls. People were crying on each other's shoulders and saying, will this ever end?
Well, do you remember what it was when you came right here?
It was like three or four.
Yeah, it was like three or four when I first started. Yeah, mm-hmm. So.
And that was a lot.
Yeah, that was a lot of money.
It is still a lot.
And I remember the first time we ever made $50,000 in a day. We thought that was unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And now, quite frequently, but not always, it's $100,000.
By the way, we still cry in the hall during the Fun Drive,
yeah.
Just so you know.
On your way out to do something else.
No.
Yeah.
There's a lot of crying going on.
It's called The Crying Game. Want to know the end of that movie?
No. That always
spoiler
gets
alert.
In trouble. All right, let's get to our the subject at hand, and that is talking about the issues of the day. There are several to talk about. I know a lot. We talked a lot about some of these yesterday in regards to these are ongoing stories, of course. One is the Secret Service issue. We have a new interim head of the Secret Service.
Looking good.
With an interesting background. And so we looked to him. We found out yesterday that a gentleman by the name of Joseph Clancy was named interim acting director of the Secret Service. He has been with the agency for a very long time. And he retired in 2011 after serving as the chief of Obama's protective detail for 2 years. From what we are hearing, it was the president's personal choice when the resignation seemed imminent. He wanted to reach out to this guy. It is also interesting to note, from my understanding, that with all of the problems that have sort of erupted with the Secret Service and the Obama administration, that one of the first issues to erupt was the two gatecrashers of the first state dinner, mm-hmm. Of which Mr. Clancy was presiding as overseeing that security detail.
I remember that on Twitter. They were quite proud of themselves.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. So that has come into some question, but the president has a great deal what's the word I'm looking for?
Confidence.
Confidence. For the president. So what do you make of it?
I keep thinking of House of Cards. I know you don't watch it, Alan, but here the vice president.
Who's in
too.
It.
Really, that's interesting.
Yeah, Jane Atkinson.
That's right.
Did
and her husband Misha is the president.
Cool. That's very cool. Anyway, in House of Cards, the main character takes his Secret Service men. He starts out as a policeman and brings them all the way with him into the White House. So. And their confidential relationship is very close. So I find myself using art to inform my thinking on the current situation. He should have someone he trusts. Sure. There have been terrible revelations of him and his family being in danger, and he should have somebody there that he has some confidence in.
Yeah, I think everybody's with you on that one, Rosemary. We do know that we were kidding around, I thought, the other day, when we said somebody called in and said the DNC should provide the security, the Democratic National Security should. Well, there are more than a few columnists and others who are now taking up that cry, which is, you know, how could it be that this is so lax for this first black president?
Mm-hmm.
And is there some kind of a is there something going on here that we may not know about? I hope not. I know that when he was elected, I was really scared for him. Really scared for him. I was, because there are so many nuts in this country, racist nuts who are in rants online all the time and the rest of it. And you don't know what pushes one of these people over the line. It's very scary to me.
Did you read about how the first choice for the job, instead of Julia Pearson, who was not the president's first thought, actually was someone who very well respected, great record, but there was a taint in his background, a suspected racial epithet. And he eventually was cleared of it. They said, no, there was nothing like that. He didn't say, but he lost the job.
The
offer was withdrawn because of that. Yeah. So the idea that there was a president in special circumstances because of his race, that was well known at the time and taken into regard.
I think that when how long was Pearson in? Less
18 months.
So just over a year. And I was reading some editorials yesterday that she wasn't given enough time to change the agency. But it seems to me that in that kind of situation where so many things fall, that a case can be made that is the right decision.
If there's a job in the world that requires you to hit the ground running, it's the one that says you have to protect the president. The president's in office 4 or maybe 8 years. There's not a lot of time to get up and run.
Right. That's an excellent point.
No, I think that's right. I mean, you know, I don't always agree with Rosemary on everything. But I can tell you, this
you had to put that in, by the way.
I know, every time.
It was a shot. There is no doubt in my mind that she should have been fired.
Yeah,
I wouldn't stop with her.
I think you're right there, too. I think the people on duty at the White House definitely that day. But go back and think about this. She has said in the 5 years there's been, what, just under 20 people who have jumped over the fence. That means you've got a known problem. So why would it take even 18 months to come up with some way to figure out how to cut the risk?
Right. Put a moat in, at least.
There was a Washington Post story, and I can't bring it up right now, but did you hear the story about the president being in the elevator with
the guy with the gun?
We talked
about it yesterday.
I mean, what? Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I mean, how does that
talk
happen?
About someone whose job needs to be looked at? Yeah.
Wow. It's but first of all,
quite a difference from the Secret Service agent who threw himself on top of Jacqueline Onassis Kennedy at the time, and all the heroics that we used to have of President Reagan. Absolutely, good point. So how have we gone? What has been the change in culture? One of our listeners said maybe it was a change putting the Secret Service under Homeland Security.
Well, yeah, and I think that
cuts in resources.
But let's take a break. We'll be right back and talk more. Well, I guess I actually the one thing, one question I had for you all is so to Ray's point, hit the ground running. So what can this guy do to turn things around, do you think, right away?
Well, first of all, I would fire a lot of people. And I would make sure everybody knows one mistake and you're out. This is not negotiable. You know, you have to bring in people who are really excellent, whether it's from the FBI or from other agencies, who know their stuff, and who will not. And just, you know, one mistake, you're gone.
Just double the guard to start. Double the amount of people to start. So instead of one guy in a white suit in front of the White House, put two there.
Like at Buckingham Palace.
Yeah. That's a great idea. Good
point.
That's
why we need woolly hats. I think you need it back to basics. This didn't used to happen.
Back to basics.
Let's
lock the door.
Please. That just so worries me.
You've
lock
got more
your
security
door.
In my house.
Yeah. Yeah. Like the congressman who held up the ADT sign. I mean, there's some like basic
Ray
home
just gave me
security
a look and said
rules.
You shouldn't have said that.
No, not at all. I didn't. Just saying hello.
All right. We'll get Ray some hello time and we'll take a break. We'll be right back after the short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Capital Cities Imported Cars, Glenmont, New York, offering new and pre-owned BMWs and Volkswagens, serving the WAMC listening area since 1975. CapitalCitiesVW.com. Community Foundation for the Greater Capital Region, working to improve the quality of life in the Capital Region by connecting donors and nonprofits. Your generosity, our stewardship. CFGCR.org. And the Black Sheep Downtown Amherst, a New York-style delicatessen and European-style all-butter-scratch bakery, caterer, and cafe, offering fair trade coffee. BlackSheepDeli.com.
I was going to say, speaking of NBC, because that's what we were just speaking about here in the room for the break. But an American freelance journalist has tested positive for Ebola while working in Liberia and is arranging to return to the U.S. His father and his employer, NBC News, said Thursday. 33-year-old man was a photojournalist with NBC. Was working freelance. They hired him
the day before,
and they sent over their correspondent to cover this issue. I believe that the correspondent and the rest of the crew are in quarantine right now
for 21 days, which is the most conservative way that they can do it. In other words, they're going further than they need to go, probably.
And so then, of course, he is being flown to the U.S. for treatment, according to his father, which brings up, I mean, this whole interesting, I think this is an interesting part of the story about what you do in covering a story about disease without, you know, getting the disease.
Yeah, I first of all, you know, I think we owe journalists like this, freelancers who risk their life for not very much money, not enough money, and who end up putting themselves in danger. We had the two journalists beheaded because they were trying to tell us what was going on in Syria and Iraq, and now this. So that's number one. I really respect these people. And then the second thing is, once again, that they keep telling us how difficult it is to contract the disease. What was the journalist doing, touching bodily fluids? How did this happen? I really would like lots of information on how people catch the disease, so that I think that's most instructive.
Well, if you are in a, and I don't know the answer to that question, but if you're in a clinic situation where,
What did he do? Roll around in a bed sheet? You don't do that as a cameraman. When? How did he
Depends
come
on the movie you're making, of course. Just saying.
That's
just saying.
Nice.
I think
nice
you're mocking
Ray.
The ill. You're going to get letters,
Ray.
No,
really.
I think that was a good. That was a good.
That was a good line.
Yeah, I like it.
Or she had me mocking clowns earlier in the week.
And it's true.
Enough.
But I mean, I think if you
Do
are
you see
in
my point, though, you're a cameraman, and it's hard to get the disease. So what was he doing? Exchanging bodily fluids? We don't know. Yeah.
Well, yes, and he had only been doing it for a little while, relatively little while. So. People have social lives, you know what I mean? And other things. Social lives.
May not have been a work-related illness.
Yeah. They have sex. They have this. They have that. You know, anything can happen before.
I don't know.
Look at the time.
Yeah.
Ray's looking at his
despite
watch.
The,
See, I was thinking
these,
something about...
the precautions. I think it sounds like it's not that hard to get it if you're in the wrong place.
Well, Gary says, panel, I think... I smell the privatizing of the Secret Service coming soon. Blackwater Security Division of Monsanto, perhaps. And then Stephen doesn't like the fact that I mentioned that other people are talking about race in this. Just when I think that Alan cannot sink low with regard to injection of race and everything today, he suggests that the Secret Service had some kind of racist element that allowed breaches because, in Alan's words, they would rather see the president dead than black. I always love it when people say, in Alan's words, and they're not my words. That's astounding. There's absolutely no evidence for such speculation. And then Jeff says, did you happen to notice how Julia Pearson testified before Congress prior to her resignation? Julia Pearson sounded just like Jodie Foster as Agent Starling in Silence of the Lambs. This stuff gets wilder.
Yeah, well, it's a shame we have to break for news.
Yes, yeah, it is, Ray.
Yeah.
And we're out of time.
Okay.
We'll be right back after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable panel. Alan Chartok, Ray Graff, Rosemary Armeo, and your letters. Roundtable@WAMC.org. Roundtable@WAMC.org to be heard. And we go over to Alan, who has letters in front of him.
Okay. And Howard says, there's a fabulous not-for-profit called RISC. Do you know about that one, Rosemary?
I don't.
That trains journalists on precautions to take when they have assignments in dangerous areas of the world. And Henry says, certain viruses can be... No, it's not Henry. It's Elizabeth. I'm so sorry. Certain viruses can be harbored in the soil. Is this true of Ebola? And what if Ebola becomes entrenched in our soil? Parvovirus is often fatal virus for dogs and is very, very hardy. It can survive on shoes, tires, etc. Perhaps we must consider quarantine and restricted travel until this deadly scourge is contained.
Maybe a microbiologist will write in and respond
yes.
to that
yeah,
question.
Well, yeah, well, yeah, she doesn't
good.
Like that. Although I thought the lady we had on yesterday was quite... quite balanced. Mm-hmm. I think she wasn't... okay, and Stephen wants it clear that he did not say, in my words, he said, in my world. Whatever.
What are you referring to now?
Whatever. You know, when you're talking about racism, post-racism.
I see.
This is Alan's world. Okay. And then James says, Ray had the best comment this morning.
We don't know what it is.
Well, no, we do know. It was the camera line.
Depends on what kind
of
movie you're making.
Yeah,
you're making.
Yeah.
It was good.
And that's what we got so far.
All right. So let us move on. This is a scary story. As a human who pays at least three or four checks a month to this organization, a cyber attack this summer on JPMorgan Chase compromised the accounts of 76 million households and 7 million small businesses, a tally that dwarfs previous estimates by the bank and puts the intrusion among the largest ever. The details of the breach, disclosed in a securities filing on Thursday, emerge at a time when consumer confidence in the digital operations of corporate America has already been shaken. Target, Home Depot, and a number of other retailers have sustained major data breaches. Last year, the information of 40 million cardholders and 70 million others were compromised at Target, while an attack at Home Depot affected 56 million cards. JP Morgan Chase, of course, is a an organization that is a main lender for both car loans and mortgages, not to mention traditional banking and cards. And I think, were they number one or two as far as cardholders in the country, I believe. And so as the severity of the intrusion, which began in June but was not discovered until July, became more clear in recent days, bank executives scrambled for the second time in 3 months to contain the fallout and to reassure skittish customers that no money has been taken and that their financial information remains secure. And this is something that Alan and I were talking about prior to the broadcast, which is, you know, interestingly, in these attacks, and I certainly don't want to downplay them in any way, but we never hear of the next step, which is, what in Target did they get anybody's money? In Home Depot, did they get anybody's money? And in this case, did it happen in June? Well, from June until October, have they gotten any money? Mm-hmm. And I find that to be an interesting aspect that
so what's really going on? There seems to be some sense that we're in some kind of cyber war with Russia. That they're doing it. You know, I mean, this has
been reported. I thought it was China.
And it could be China.
There's criminals, you know, in Russia.
So what is really happening? Maybe this is a warning shot of some kind. You know, don't mess up.
Could be. Yeah. I mean, if you were an enemy and you wanted to completely crumble confidence in the economy and thereby disrupt everything from top to bottom in the country, it's a darn good way to start. And the advent of electronic commerce has allowed this to happen.
And if the Russian thing is true, we do know that Putin has problems with boundaries, and to put it mildly. And, you know, we're living in a different world now with different ways of fighting. And it has been well known for a long time that the United States is beefing its stuff up to counter this, and in fact, to even be aggressive when needed. We had the nuclear standoff. Maybe now this is the cyber thing.
Just two quick things to read from this article in New York Times. Hackers drill deep into the bank's vast computer system, reaching more than 90 servers. People with knowledge of the investigation said as they analyzed the contours of the breach, those in law enforcement remain puzzled, partly because there is no evidence that the attackers looted any money from the customer accounts. But obviously, there's a reason that they're doing it.
Well, they speculate phishing is part of the problem. Yeah. In other words, you might see the results of this in a month, 2 months, 3 months.
Yeah. That lack of any apparent motive has generated speculation among the law enforcement officials and security experts that the hackers, which some thought to be from Southern Europe, may have been sponsored by the elements of the Russian government. That's what Alan was saying. The people with... By the time the bank security team discovered the breach in late July, hackers had already obtained the highest level of administrative privilege to dozens of the bank's computer servers. According to people with knowledge of the investigation, it is still unclear how hackers managed to gain such deep access so quickly.
Yeah, this is all out of science fiction novels. There's no protection. And if this organization can't protect its computers, who can? And it makes me rethink. You know, maybe I should just like write a check again and put it in a mail. You know, with the stamp.
Yeah. Traveler's
checks.
And
then I don't have to worry. I don't have to worry about
identity. Your mattress. Second, Alan. Put it in the mattress.
The thing is, this might not be science fiction. If in fact a foreign government is involved, it could well be a person on the ground in that organization, a mole, if you will, who got the initial access. Seriously, spies are everywhere.
That sounds very novelistic to me, and quite possibly. I think the governments could be involved. I'm sure the Chinese government has worked extensively on hacking.
Well, we know we
spying.
Are. We are ourselves. Yeah,
that's definitely true. But this is immensely rich area for organized crime. Maybe they're working in cahoots in places like Russia. It can happen. So, does this mean for me? I just want to pay my mortgage bill.
I think that's what everybody's saying. And Joe, I guess that's the question that everybody's asking. what should I do now?
Yeah.
Right. And so they said, I want to read this from J.P. Morgan. They say that it would take months for the bank to swap out its programs and applications and renegotiate licensing deals with its technology suppliers, possibly giving the hackers time to mine the bank system for unpatched or undiscovered vulnerabilities. Beyond its disclosures, J.P. Morgan did not comment on what its investigation had found, but a J.P. Morgan spokeswoman said yesterday that, quote, describing the bank's breach as among the largest was comparing apples and oranges.
What does that mean?
I don't know. That's what I was going to ask you.
I just thought it was one of those obfuscating things some slimy PR guy, you know, says. You know, to defer.
Because I don't know what you if you say it's the largest, okay, but it's a security breach, and one affected 70 million, one affected 76 million. That seems that's the same fruit.
It's like it does, and you are also right about. I feel like a broken record. I keep saying, "Tell me more," to the CDC and the Secret Service, and now to the banking industry. What is going on? And we need to know this.
And we also have to have at some point in our society. At some point in time, before there's nothing left and we are all in bunkers eating boxes of saltines, we need to have some protocol and some timeline where organizations tell the public.
Right.
Because these things happen, the investigations go on undercover for obvious reasons. But at what point are they obligated to tell the customer?
Yeah.
Well, that's a great point. And again, you know, Target was faster. Because the breach happened right around the Black Friday weekend, and then they let people know like 2 weeks later. But in this case, it was June, and I sort of understand why you don't, because you don't, especially if you don't have all those holes, it may make the attackers work faster.
But the attackers already know that there are holes.
Right.
So if you,
but right now we don't know that they're taking anything, and they, as you say, they may be using the information later. So would that's
a possibility.
Up the ante, yeah.
But the other possibility that I'm really confused about here is it may well have nothing to do with taking anything out of anybody's account. Maybe it may well have to do with just showing that they can take stuff out of your account.
So
and that
shake
this
us
may
up
be intergovernmental stuff.
Could be.
It's all possible.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we will talk about the governor of New York asking SUNY to overhaul sexual assault rules. We'll discuss that and other issues when we come back after this short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Williams College Music Department, presenting visiting artist, the Argentine-born Pablo Aslan, and his quintet, October 6th at 8 p.m. in Brooks Rogers Recital Hall, music.williams.edu. Bistro 63 at the Monkey Bar, downtown Amherst, offering casual lunches and dinners featuring steak, seafood, cocktails, and wines using local organic products, banquet facilities, and patio dining, bistro63.com. And Safe Harbors of the Hudson, Newburgh, presenting Narcissism and the Self-Portrait at the Ann Street Gallery, contemporary art by emerging and established artists, safeharborsofthehudson.org.
Good morning. Welcome back to our roundtable panel. And Ray was wondering who the bass player is. Do you know who the bass player is?
Stanley Clark.
Yes, there
Excellent.
You go. Okay. Welcome back. And we want to get to this issue. Governor Cuomo has ordered SUNY to overhaul its sexual assault rules. Governor Cuomo said on Thursday that he had instructed the State University at New York to overhaul its approach to preventing, investigating, and prosecuting sexual assault, including making affirmative consent the rule on all 64 of its campuses. Cuomo, announcing the change at a news conference in Manhattan, said SUNY's new approach, which is to be put into effect in the next 60 days, would eventually lead to a statewide law regulating sexual assault policies at all New York colleges and universities.
We know this is a real problem because a lot of women report rape on college campuses. Of course, you know, as Linda Fairstein, who is the special, well, the former sex crimes prosecutor, who has written on this extensively, says, well, you know, it's not perfect. Well, it's not perfect, because, but Rosemary said on this show one time, she has boys, and she's told the boys, always ask, can I? Well, you know, we have a lot of politicians who we know don't follow the rules that they're about, who they're about to implement without naming any names. So, what are you looking at, Dorit?
No, just listening.
You're looking out of the corner of your eye at me.
No.
So, you know, I think that this is going to be very important when it comes to prosecutions.
Because the positive consent.
Yeah, that's right. Because those questions are going to get asked during that time. Yeah. But, you know, this is a very big problem.
Well, I think he was right in calling it a national epidemic. I think it certainly has reached that stage, and it is certainly something that is. He also, in his statement yesterday, said that this is Harvard and Yale and Princeton and Albany and Binghamton or Buffalo and Oswego, and certainly not just a SUNY problem. This is a problem throughout the college system, and but it will be interesting to see, you know, how you enforce it, and then from where you go, because this, from what I read, is very similar to
California.
Governor Brown and California, right?
Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty predictable here. I'm a feminist. I work on a college campus. Obviously, I think this is needed and important. Easy to make a joke about it. You know, do young men now have to, before anything ensues, say, please just sign this little release right here and make it. But the truth is, you know, this is not a new problem. It's been going on for some time. It's taken women a long time to bring to the attention. The drugs that are used, date rapes are out of control, and this really would make it the law that if the woman is drunk or unconscious or drugged or simply out of it, that's not consent. That's not consensual sex.
Right.
So. I keep thinking about the conversation Alan had. Was it yesterday? Ken Lovett? Was it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you were talking about Governor Cuomo shooting to be a social liberal and a fiscal conservative.
Right.
And
it wasn't working.
That was the point. But
as we saw with the Deborah Teach out there.
But clearly this is another one of those steps. And there was a tweet yesterday, and I forget where it was from, but had Cuomo rated B by a conservative organization as fiscal conservative, as they were rating the governors. And there were five A's, and Cuomo was in the second tier in the B's, and one of the only Democrats in that list. If he has a prayer of being president, is that what he has to do? Be a social liberal and a fiscal conservative?
Well, he is a Clintonian. He follows the Clinton playbook, and that's what Clinton did, and did it very effectively. And I'm sure that's exactly. I mean, it's one thing in New York, but it's another thing. And by the way, I'm hearing a lot of screaming about taxes in New York. Personally, I'm hearing it. Mm-hmm. And also in Massachusetts, where I live, people are really complaining. They're really hurting. Mm-hmm. He knew from the very beginning that whoever his opponent was going to be, they were going to come after him and they were going to do all of that. But that's not the point of the moment. You know, I think that sexual activity on campuses, this law will protect women, of course, to some degree. But if you think about it, it also may be to protect men, because it has not always been the case that, you know, a woman who consents then says later on, you know, I didn't consent. I didn't do that. So I think if there is a contractual sort of discussion, although in the heat of passion, I don't know that there always can be.
And I like the idea of this law, which I think, you know, the governor needs credit for it in the same way that he gets credit for the gun bill that he put through at some cost to himself from people who disagree with him. But it does put more responsibility on men, which I'm already on the record for in domestic abuse. The same thing. They have more control and more power, and it's nice that it's not always on the women anymore. Like, you're a bad girl. You shouldn't have done this. Your fault. Pay the consequences. Which is very Victorian, and it's how we thought here for a long time. So we're beginning to have a more equal share of.
Well, it wasn't that long ago before you've been thrown out of college for having engaged
in
some kind of premarital sex.
Yeah. The other thing that really did surprise me in reading this article was that
that much of the specifics of a sexual assault conduct and how it was handled was really up to the individual campus.
Right.
And so if you were going to SUNY Adirondack versus SUNY Binghamton or Buffalo, those policies were different. And now this is a blanket policy for all 64.
One aspect that's really good is that the woman and her family presumably would have a say in what agency handles the rape or the assault. Up to right now, the campus police might handle it, or the city police, or you don't know.
Right. We welcome your letters on this and any of the other topics that we've discussed. Roundtable@WAMC.org, roundtable@WAMC.org. As we mentioned, this is our pre-fund drive edition of the Roundtable panel this morning. And Alan gave us some numbers earlier, but we want to check in with Megan Finnegan, who's been with us from the very beginning of the Lockbox Challenge, to tell us where we are now and how things are going leading into the fund drive, which begins Monday morning at 6 a.m. Good morning, Megan.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm really good, actually. I think we're in great shape, actually, going into the fund drive. So, you know, we had the $300,000 challenge that we had to meet to get $30,000 more, and we actually met it and have exceeded it now. So including the challenge money that was on the table, we're going to go in at least with $343,050.
Which is terrific. Do you think there's any chance, Megan, you're the eternal optimist. I'm much more of a pessimist. You thought it was good. I didn't think it was so good. But my question to you is, do you think that we could possibly make, you know, get to the $400,000 mark before Monday morning?
I do. I really do think that we can.
You do?
I do.
Do
you
disagree?
I'll go on the record of saying, yes, I think we could do it.
Well, I think we could do it if everybody just got together.
Yeah, I think people really know the Lockbox works. You know, it takes time off the fund drive, and people really love that.
Some people love it. Some people love the fund drive. I love the fund drive. Yeah. I know Ray loves the fund drive.
Yeah, I do.
So we do. But wouldn't it be great if we could go in with $400,000? If everybody could just say, okay, the challenge was great. The challenge is over. We met it, unbelievably. But now we can go in and we could make another 60 grand and write something like 60 grand. And we could be there. Yeah.
Earlier this week, you castigated me for my negativity and you wanted to be positive on the air. So you have been positive today.
She's always positive.
She really let me have it. So you're too negative about this.
She's always positive. Megan's always positive. And she told me from the very beginning we would make it. And we did make it. But the question I had since we made it was, did we make it because we were negative about it, or did we make it because we were positive about it?
Well, you need some focus groups on this.
Yeah. Well, I see an awful lot of positive comments come through when people make their pledges. And
people love
that. That keeps me feeling very positive.
People love the station.
Yep. All right. Thanks, well, Megan. We are. Thank you very much,
yeah.
Megan.
Thank you.
Sunshine. So long.
We'll be back on Monday morning, 6 a.m. for the fund drive. And then, you know, the way things are going, it'll be $400,000. It would be done by Wednesday.
Wouldn't that be wonderful?
Tune up
there
the banjo.
Excellent.
Tune up the banjo.
All right. We're going to. I want to thank Alan and Ray and Rosemary. Thank you. We'll see you all on Monday for the fund drive.
I'm so enthused.
No, I do. I'm enthused.
Are you
happy? Enthused. I am very enthused because I know our audience.
There you go.
And they're always there for us.
WAMC.org.